Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, and welcome to a solo episode of The Good, the Bad, and the Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, your AEW-focused podcast hosted by me, Fred. No Tyler Fornes this week. He is off in the north, as he told me when I said, hey, are you ready for the show? And then he said, I can't do it today. Didn't I tell you? And you know what? He may have honestly told me, and I just forgot, because I do not have a very good brain. But yeah, No Tyler this week, so riding solo. We're going to talk about Wrestle Dream. We're going to get caught up on the news. I'm going to yell about a very silly thing that they did with their booking in a week of pretty silly things, if we're being honest. Let's go ahead and hit the news. I guess the big news this week, and you know, look, anything compared to the TV deal that has guaranteed the success of the company and owned various weirdos and freaks and grifters and ne'er-do-wells, black hats, villains, is the re-signing of Daniel Garcia to a continued contract with AEW after heavy negotiations between himself and WWE. Now, if you remember at the last pay-per-view AEW did All Out, he had a match with MJF. And he lost that match, but then beat up MJF afterwards. In a damn good match, frankly. So you would think that if at that point in time they felt like he would be returning to the company for sure, they would have put him over. Especially with MJF taking time off to film movies. We got Daniel Garcia back in the fold officially for multiple years. No one's, I haven't seen at least a formal announcement or even a formal report on just how long that is. But you'd have to think it'd be at least 3 years. I don't know, it'd be five. If I was Daniel Garcia, I would sign a short-term contract just to bring the maximum amount of money out of the market. Because you would think that the amount of money available to him in two or three or however many years would be higher than now. Especially after what one would assume would be a big push from AEW. So I think that's a big move for AEW, and it's good news for them. And good news for Daniel Garcia, because it's pretty apparent that they're going to treat him like a big project in the next year or so. It is nice to finally be done with the kind of tap dancing around the booking of him, where it has been, we are featuring him, but we aren't quite 100% ready to commit to him at various points. I mean, they made a big deal for him out of the C2 last year, but they did it by having him lose every time. And like, it worked for him. This wasn't a losing streak gimmick, but it did set up a big win in a nice way and set him apart a little bit. But, you know, specifically the MJF feud and the way that match ended, which was a little odd considering that MJF was leaving. You know, you'd think that Daniel Garcia would just go over, but he didn't. So this is good for everyone. As I take a drink from my Diet Coke, it's always good to drink carbonated liquids on a podcast. I'm not going to edit that out. More serious news, Killswitch, has some long-term health concerns from his case of pneumonia, bilateral pneumonia, if I recall correctly. He's not back in training for Brian Alvarez. He's been found to have a calcification on his heart valve, which is not good. And is having in Brian's words, per the or via the Observer newsletter, iron production issues, which I think he just means anemia. But neither of those are really desirable. We'll see how he progresses. He's also reported to still be on oxygen, I believe, at least as of earlier this week. Very scary situation. I think, as much as I'd like to see him back in the ring, because he is talented and I enjoy watching him, I just hope that he has the best outcome with his health, you know, frankly, for day-to-day living, even more so than being able to wrestle. But best wishes to him. Speaking of illnesses, Britt Baker missed this week's Dynamite due to a case of strep throat, which is probably a good decision for everyone involved to not go spreading that around the locker room. But she announced that in a video where I read, I haven't actually watched it yet because I ran out of time. Why did I run out of time? I just forgot to watch it, let's be honest. She apparently trashed people with conspiracy theories about the hurricane, so I'm on board with that, and I do hope she gets better soon. She's probably already there, if not close to. But speaking of the women's division, Chris Statlander on Collision last Saturday. I've got to go off on this. So after she had that long build to turning on Willow Nightingale and aligning with Stokely Hathaway and all of this, for months and months and months to build to that and a great feud with Willow with a great, I guess, blow-off match, though frankly, I don't know. It didn't really feel like a blow-off match at the time, but they haven't done anything else with this, so I guess it technically is, with Willow and that Chicago street brawl fight, whatever they called it, I forget now, whatever, it's dumb. But basically the no DQ match, the death match division. She had all the momentum in the world as a heel, but they managed to do this in a company where the two champions, their two top women champions, are heels with Mariah May and Mercedes Moné. And I gotta be honest, Chris is having a better year than either of them. So, of course, they gotta turn her face, put her opposite Moné. And I have no information, I've seen no reporting indicating this whatsoever, but it has the, to me, it has the stink of Mercedes was asked who she wants to work with next. She likes the idea of working with Chris Statlander, so she said Chris Statlander. And they didn't bother to come up with an alternative to match the storytelling. So now, on Collision, this past Collision, they had this horribly, just, it wasn't a bad segment in a vacuum, but just like a complete undoing of all the storyline progression and character work and, you know, the integration of Stokely Hathaway into that act, and it felt fresh and it was a good heel act, and it's done. There's no mention of Stokely when Chris is on the, you know, goes backstage to confront Mercedes and Camille. It's just, she's more than a woman, Chris Statlander. Why? Like, just talk about a 180. Frankly, a 360 would be better if they just did a swerve here, but the problem is Moné and May are both positioned so far along the face-heel spectrum that they're solidly in the heel camp. And it'd be very hard to get either to get a face reaction at this point in time. Why not pick somebody else on the roster? I don't know. I mean, they had the match between Moné and Emi Sakura a week ago. I don't think that it would have been a difference maker on a pay-per-view. But let's be honest, I don't think that first of all, Moné and Moné isn't even on WrestleDream, so who cares about that? So maybe they're setting something up for the next show, Full Gear. But, I just am not enthused. about this decision. It's not fun. It's not funny. So I don't know, man. I'm just not into this whatsoever. It feels like AEW has fallen on a track of very kind of knee-jerk booking. It feels like the hallmarks of the early company where they had a plan and they stuck to that plan, damn it, even if it didn't work sometimes. That ain't it right now. We got 25 people and a week of booking. I don't know what's going on backstage, but it'd be nice if they got it together and did a little forward thinking more blatantly at times and not just be like, well, yeah, sure. Statlander was a heel for months and months, but now she's a face. There's not a turn angle. There's not anything setting this up. She just confronts the champion. All right, so we got a new Hungy Cat here. And the thing is attacking my microphone cord. You got to stop that. Come here. She's a quiet thing. Yeah. Ain't going to give any comedy meows or anything. I'm just going to pick her up and corporal cuddle her for a while. But yeah, that's just bad writing. Bad, terrible writing. That's Vince McMahon nonsense from like the bad days of Vince booking. So nobody would say no to him whatsoever. Gotta hope that AEW cuts that out so that, you know, they'll be better. But hey, here we are. Because of the Tate twins, Kevin Foote/Kelly lawsuit, we found out. Goodbye, Gene. Do not come back for this cord. I ain't having it. We found out that AEW's parent company is called Beatnik Investments. And in the lawsuit, she's found another cord. She's found Velcro. She doesn't want to eat cords. But this Velcro strap here is trouble. So I am definitely going to rip that if I can. It's not, it's hard wrapped around the thing. This is going to be a bigger disaster than usual. I have no idea why anyone would keep me around on a podcast in general. Yeah. But yeah, Beatnik Investments, that's a thing. That's the name of the AEW parent company, and that had not been previously reported. Another tidbit. As I keep fighting off the cat, trying to resolve this issue. If you're bad on background noise and podcasts, one, I don't know why you're still listening to this one, because I do my best to just wreck it every time out. But two, I'm sorry. Anyways, the other interesting note about the ownership of AEW is that in this lawsuit, they had a form that they were required to fill out and indicate if anyone else own 10% or more of their company. They filled it out and they indicated no one else did. So from that, we can glean that while there has been finally reporting that Warner Brothers Discovery owns a piece, a non-voting piece of the company, we can put that together from statements that Tony Khan has said that no one else has a voting stake in the company, it's just him, to reporting that Warner Brothers Discovery does own a piece, to a report that it's less than 10%. Maybe by 2034, we'll find out an exact number. I don't know. But it's not more than 10%. I can tell you that much. Little tidbits to round out the news. MJF's role in Happy Gilmore 2 is apparently going to be a big one. He will be Happy Gilmore's son. We'll see if the Cornellverse will be ripped off with Angry Gilmore. Or anything of that sort. And he's also going to immediately move on to act in another film, which also co-stars Ron Perlman and Justin Long. I did not see what the title of that was, but maybe Google will have that. We're going to do everyone's favorite thing for a podcast to do. Audible typing. Nope. No title, as far as I can tell. Fightful reported the second movie, I believe, so. Yeah. Here we go. It is, according to, okay, I gotta find a better source than this. I don't know. Gonna keep Googling. Good Lord. Great audio. Fantastic audio. I can't find a good source for this, so I'm not going to talk about it. Oh, here it is. I found it on Sports Illustrated. That's a better source than my first one. The movie appears to be called Stranglehold. Possibly. Well, I don't know, actually, because SI says that Long and Perlman had been cast in an upcoming movie earlier this summer called Stranglehold, but production is already wrapped, so that would not be MJF. Maybe he's already done it, and that was part of production wrapping. Who knows? Whatever. Anyways. So no more MJF for a little bit, at least. Thunder Rosa, she's got a match on the 15th of October in London for Riot Cabaret Wrestling. Obviously that's in 4 days, so next Monday, Tuesday, I can read a calendar. That is noteworthy after there was a little slap fight last week or a week ago. I've already forgotten when, but in the past couple weeks, where Dave Meltzer reported that he suffered a concussion a few weeks ago on TV and would be out for a bit. And Rosa slapped back by saying that she kind of talked around it, if I remember correctly. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, so I'm not going to commit too much here. But anyways, there you go. So maybe she's on the comeback path. Maybe she is going to cancel that booking. I guess we'll see. More health news. Anthony Henry. Poor Anthony Henry. He tore his biceps in a match on the 3rd. I believe that was a Ring of Honor match, if I recall correctly, against Gabe Kidd. That's a shame. He's a great talent. I really enjoy watching him in the ring. It just feels like he's never going to get that push beyond, like, a jobber to the stars in AEW, which, hey, okay. I don't know that he really had much upside beyond that, considering his age and everything, but I've always liked him, so. Always liked that team he had with JD Drake. But hopefully he gets a full return and appropriately, I never want to say a quick return, because look at Hiroshi Tanahashi now after he, you know, didn't go to surgery for all those injuries he should have. So get done what you need done, Anthony. Get the surgery if you need it. Just think long term here. Rob Van Dam has signed a WWE Legends contract, but he can still appear on AEW television. The news there is that he just can't do any merch with AEW. And that's this week's news. So let's, you know, I don't have Tyler here. I don't have Mr. Warren Hayes, who bamboozled me onto his live stream last night to rank the women of WWE. 75%, I can promise I have not seen work before. So that was a terribly awkward experience that I definitely suffered through. I had opinions on like 15 of them, maybe. So the rest, I'm like, that's not a real name. That's not a real person. But yeah, I'm going to go through the Wrestle Dream card as it is announced. Of course, the show is this Saturday night. I should probably check if they're moving Collision off night. What's the plan here? I don't think that they are. I think they just aren't doing Collision this week. Helps if you go to the right month. Yeah, there's no Collision this week. Okay, easy enough. There is a battle of the belts next week, the most important. Good lord. Is there anything announced for that? No. They got battle of the belts in 6 days and zero matches for it. This company, man, I gotta tell you. All right, so WrestleDream. Let's talk about WrestleDream. According to the Wikipedia, there are 11 matches announced for WrestleDream, including one on the pre-show. We'll kind of undoubtedly get more, just because there should be 3 matches, you would think, on that pre-show. So let's go through it. Let's go through the card. There's one match on the pre-show. As mentioned, it is for the Ring of Honor World Television Championship. That's going to be Atlantis Jr. defending against Brian Cage. Brian has Triple A experience at a minimum. So he has some Lucha Libre experience. Lannis is not a pure flyer. I think this match should be pretty good. I'm looking forward to it. I have been terribly behind on watching CMLL this year. I haven't really seen any of the development of Lannis Jr., how he's doing. What I've heard is good. So that's a plus. And I mean, look, Brian Cage, not without his flaws, but he's good. You know, let's not pretend he's not good. He does cool stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think that'll be a fun little match. I'll say I'm at a 7 out of 10 in terms of excitement. Since we are doing the heat check, I'll do the my little scores for how excited I am for the matches listed. The cat is back. The cat is causing trouble. The cat is in a cord. The cat has been removed. All right. Back to the card. Our first listed match is for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Chris Jericho against Mark Briscoe. I honestly thought that there was a Ring of Honor card coming up when they started to set this up, but I guess not. That brand is in such a weird... I got my head on a swivel because of this cat. Her name is Jean. There we go. She's wrangled once more, but not for long. She's maybe a year old, so she's just like a spitfire, just running everywhere, jumping on everything. It's ridiculous. It's too much. You ain't got to be like this cat. All right, so Jericho Briscoe. I'll put this at a 7. I think this will probably be a pretty good match, but Jericho's definitely shown his age recently. I'm not saying he hasn't had good matches. I really like that Orange Cassidy match he had a few weeks ago on TV. Goodbye, cat. So I think this has a good chance. There is a chance it will be a disaster. That's just part of Chris Jericho in 2024, is his outings can just be outright bad. Because, you know, we're definitely in the steep decline, I think, age of Jericho. The start of it, let's be clear, but it's not going to be... I can't see him completely reversing the clock at this point. You know, he's got Keith, he's got Big Bill. Could be a lot of smoke and mirrors here. I get the feeling they're not going to do a title change. I get the feeling that we might have ourselves an angle after the match. I could foresee... I could foresee myself cursing this cat in the near future. That is not acceptable behavior, Kite. But I could foresee Chris Jericho losing this match as a result of something botched with Big Bill, and that leading to the turn that they've done a little teasing for. Most notably, about a month ago on the Dynamite, where Chris Jericho very much lampshaded their relationship. It might be too soon. They might wait a little bit, tease it some more. But I could definitely see Big Bill doing something and not going right. And that causing strife to set up at least a turn, if not actually doing. So I do worry a little bit about Bill keeping his steam if he's completely beaten up by Keith and Jericho. The old how Randy Orton was kicked out of Evolution. Booking that did not do him any favors. But, you know, I think Bill's got a lot of momentum right now. He's doing the best work of his career. He's awesome. This is a pro Big Bill podcast, and we were on that pretty early compared to most people, so I'm going to take a little mini victory lap with that. So, I don't know. I think this will probably be a good match because Mark Briscoe is very good, but it's not a guarantee. There are some concerns here. Okay, that's officially the removal of the cat. So officially, I won't be interrupted anymore. The downside is that this has resulted in the closure of the door in the room I do my recording in, which is the hottest room in the house. I still have space anywhere else for it, so it's going to be nonsense. I'll be fine. It'll be great. Next up on the card is Darby Allin and Brody King. I got that at a 9 out of 10. Not very much storyline to build it up, but damn, these two can work well together, and they did a lot last year, so I'm happy to see it again. And that should be a great match. So not a whole lot to say with it. They're doing a little story where Brody begged Darby to bring him in, and he didn't. Which, for a babyface Darby, not too much of a babyface thing. But yeah, so... But this should be a great match. These two are fantastic workers and work really well together. Next up, Jack Perry defending the AEW TNT Championship with Katsuyori Shibata as his challenger. Look, I don't think Perry's been great since he's come back. He's perfected his ability to come across as a heel, and he's also not stepped it up in the ring. I think that his output has been disappointing, frankly, since his return to AEW. Not bad, but disappointing. I was hoping for more of a step up from him. This will be a good opportunity for him to have a good match. Shibata's still very good. I could see them hitting 4 stars, you know, get the old notebook level pretty easily. So I want to be surprised by that. I don't know about Jack Perry. I thought he was, you know, going to come in as a ball of fire. And, you know, he'd work as a heel, of course, but we just ain't been there, truthfully. I'm just kind of underwhelmed by what we've been seeing from him. And you'd hope for better performances, you know, since this is a big opportunity for him. And there's been some good matches. I'm not going to pretend that there wasn't, but it hasn't been like Jack Perry has reached a new level. He's taken maybe a half step forward when I was hoping for like 2. So is that a me issue? It could be. You know, I'm not going to pretend it couldn't be. But Shibata is just Shibata. He's a very good in-ring wrestler. The phone gimmick ain't great, but it's something, I guess. So who can be too mad about that? Jack Perry's truck, his bus, got no use for it. I just don't care. I don't think it really makes him look cool. These little videos of him driving across the country to shows doesn't do anything for me on a character level. I don't think it makes him look cool or defiant, which I think are supposed to be kind of the two key attributes of his character right now. It's just a dude driving. I don't know. Maybe this is me on an island. I don't care. You know, that's just me. Next match on the listing is a 3-way for the AEW International Championship with Kanesuke Takeshita and Ricochet challenging Will Ospreay, champion. Look, would this be better with would this be better as just a one-on-one match with either of the opponents? Yes. Would it be bad with these two as the opponents? No, it's not going to be bad. Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty awesome. You know, you can complain about not getting the match that you wish for, but frankly, this is going to rock. These are three absolute high-level guys. And I think they're going to do something pretty awesome. So I'm at a 10 for this one. I think they'll have a really good match. The question that we need to consider is, are we going to get a straight finish? And I don't think so. I think there's going to be some nonsense with maybe Kyle Fletcher turning on Will Ospreay here. I think they've been building to that, you know, kind of teasing that Fletcher is with Callis, but not with him Will Ospreay regarding him. So maybe he'll turn and show that, no, he's decided to stick with Callis, that Callis would do more for him than his so-called friend Will Ospreay ever would. That's just my take. I don't know. But I think this match will be great. AEW has been on a run of some bad finishes, though, just with... I thought that the Kesha thing last week for Ricochet Ospreay was something that never would have happened in the early years of the company. They would have had him run in after the match. But this is no longer a company that, like, you are going to get a decisive finish. Maybe once in a while it won't be a winner-loser situation. Maybe there'll be a time limit draw or something. But we aren't protecting those finishes anymore. We are definitely moving down the WWE spectrum of, well, it doesn't really matter. And I hate to see that. If this is a situation where you drew an initial fan group with these kind of approaches to booking, where you did value things like wins and losses, and you valued finishes that made sense and weren't just like, we're going to book ourselves into a corner. And kind of like that Okada Danielson match last week. So I don't know. tighten the belt, get it together. This stuff has to matter. Because you keep going down this path, you're going to end up just as a shallow imitation of WWE. And that doesn't do you any favors. You're pretending, you know, you're calling yourself the Challenger brand. I wouldn't really say pretending. That's not a good choice of words. But if you're going to call yourself the Challenger brand, you have to be different from the initial, from the not challenge, the established brand, I guess. Pepsi don't taste like Coke. Pepsi tastes different than Coke. You know, you can go up and down the sodas. Dr. Pepper is the number two popular soda right now, from what I read. Tastes nothing like Coke. It's got a different flavor, and that's what they build it around. AEW's got to have a different flavor. Otherwise, they're going to end up like the Bischoff-Hogan era of TNA, where they've got all this possible, you know, potential to succeed, and they get fixated on the wrong things and make bad decisions and shoot themselves in the foot repeatedly until there isn't a footing. So, I mean, and attendances are flagging. I think that's part of this. I should say a reflection of this. And the weird thing with AEW is their attendances have been tough all year outside of big events. Like your week-to-week TVs, they've struggled. They really have. I was able to go to the Lexington, Kentucky Dynamite on hours notice and get a, like, 24 hours notice, get a nice floor seat for a reasonable price. And, you know, there's just, it's really a walk up to the door, do your best to find the cheapest ticket kind of situation. Unless you just absolutely want to be front row or as close as possible to the ring, I don't know why you would be buying tickets way in advance right now. The week to week is good, but not so great that, you know, you're really going to be punished for missing out. This is a whole different conversation, and I'll cut myself off here just to get done what I was supposed to be getting done, but this is the situation. This is the truth of the matter. So, our next match is Private Party challenging the Young Bucks for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. I'm at let's call it a 7.5 here. I think the Young Bucks have looked better recently. I still think they've had really a very good year, just with some periods where they've disappeared. But I do think if you actually sit down and look, now maybe I'm just higher on the Bucks than most people, which is entirely possible, but I think that they still have like a top 15 act in terms of match output from what I've watched this year. And I can talk about that a little bit later after we get this done. Private Party, I think they've improved, particularly Isaiah Cassidy, Zay. I guess he's just going by Zay now. I thought he improved greatly at selling, especially while Mark Quinn was out. I think that they're a good team now. Not perfect, not absolute top level, but good. And look, it'd be a little bogus to sit here and complain about AEW signing too many old guys and everything, and then turn around and complain about them pushing a young, but, you know, early signing up their card to try to establish them. That's a good thing that they're doing. Let's be clear. I do think they haven't done enough to build up Private Party, though. If this was after 4 months or something, 3 months of them consistently getting wins on TV and being pushed up the ladder and being clearly made a top tag team, this would feel different. I don't think they've done that successfully. They just feel like a team that has kind of popped up a month ago from the sidelines, and they're like, yeah, they're going to get a title match. And that doesn't move the needle, you know? And I worry that they're going to lose this match. They're going to have a good but not great match, and then they're just going to go right back down the you know, the internal ranking, I guess, the hierarchy of AEW, and that's not establishing a new act. That's not positive. You know, that's not great. So it's kind of frustrating, but we'll see how this goes, and we'll see how things go moving forward. Willow Nightingale, Mariah May for the AEW Women's World Championship. I had a 6 on this because I think Mariah May has been a disappointment as the champion. She's not having good matches. I don't think she's cutting good promos. She's a heel, but like, she's not generating heat and she's not entertaining. So are we just going to say, oh, she's a heel and like, that's enough for me? It's not. It's clear with Toni Storm. I think it's clear that Toni Storm still doing the timeless act in CMLL and Stardom recently, that they're not moving away from that. So one reasons that they're still, you know, going to do something with the Mariah May Toni Storm story. And if that's good news for you or not, that's up to you. And I think Willow has had a fantastic year. I have her as basically the best American-based wrestler this year. I have Chris Statlander as number two. I've been working on my FSM number top 50 over the past few months, and I've been posting updates. If you're in the Discord, you can see that in this show's channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord, and I'm trying to update it once a week as I watch stuff. She's had a fantastic year. If Mariah May can have a good match with anyone on this roster, it's Willow Nightingale. So she damn well better. I've just reached this point with Mariah May where I am not impressed. I'm underwhelmed. I'm underwhelmed. So she's got to put up and she's got to show something here. And I hope that she does. I'd like for her to be doing well. I don't have beef with her, but I just think she hasn't been doing well. So let's see it, you know? So fingers crossed, we'll get to see that eventually. We'll get to see it this Saturday, I hope. Four more matches. We got Hangman Adam Page against Jay Wyatt with its week, question mark. 1 week of build. I mean, week as an adjective would make sense. These two will have a great match. I have no doubt about it. It should end up in the notebook. But the build on this has been minimal. I can't even say bad. Just there hasn't been much. So am I going to be all fired up about this match? No. So it's here. And they'll have a good match, probably. Assuming there's not a bad finish. I think this one is another one. We'll see if Jay White stays a face for now. I don't think there'll be a turn off this match directly, but I mean, even when he's a face, just like Jay White is, you're just waiting for him to turn heel. He's better as a heel. And I know there's been injury issues and stuff, but man, his usage in AEW has just been kind of flat. So, but I'll put this at like an 8 just because I'm a little trepidatious about the finish, but we'll see on that. Speaking of trepidatious, we have still listed on the main card for some reason, MXM Collection against the Acclaimed, which is the most pre-show match I could think of, frankly, between these, with the Acclaimed right now. I know they've done storyline for it. I haven't been blown away by that storyline. I'm at a 4 on this. I thought the Acclaimed was making progress, and then it became 2024, I guess. I'm done. I'm just over them. I need them to go away. I need them to be freshened up. It's not happening. I don't anticipate it happening. I need less Billy Gunn. I'm not saying he hasn't been good at points. I'm just kind of tired of the sack. That's what it is. And I know they try to give themselves a slightly aggressive tinge heading into that match they had with FTR and Young Bucks. And look, it wasn't 100% the Acclaim's fault that that match wasn't good, but there is a percentage in there. It's up to you to dole it out. I am sad because these are two talented guys and they just seem like they've run out of steam, but they keep getting pushed and it's tough. It's tough for me as a viewer, but there's a chance this will be a good match, like a 3-star match. Could get up to 3.5, I guess, but there's a chance that they could do something extremely goofy with this. And I'll just bring up the QT Marshall Paul White pay-per-view from like 2019 or 20, whenever it was. I'll just leave that there. We got a best 2 out of 3 falls match of Hologram against the Beast Mortos. that was, I'm excited about this one. Holograms look good since he's come in, and he's been built up well. I swear, in this week's Observer, Meltzer was like, "Why? What was the story with Commander and Hologram?" The story is that Hologram's on a winning streak. He's facing a fellow luchador, and he beat him. Do you need more? That's the story. Hologram is being built up. I don't know what else you need. We could talk about Title Tuesday as, you know, a whole thing with no title matches. One, I guess, but, and, you know, they tried very hard to retcon it. So, or just its meeting so that you'd have the Danielson and, Yuta Claudio Moxley booking, and try to claim that fit the concept, but that don't work for me, brother. And you had Monet beating Emi Sakura in a pretty good match. But again, not as good as I hoped it'd be. I went like 3.5 on, I think. I'm rambling. But Hologram beats Mortos, that could steal the show. That could genuinely, there, I don't think it will be the best match on the show. But I think it's probably going to be really damn good. It could be like 4.5 plus. That would not shock me. But with Jake Roberts' new group, with the LFI, Beast Mortos involved, I don't know, man. I don't know. And then we have our main event, which I was very excited about the build for it, and then it just kind of stopped a couple weeks ago, I felt like, with Jon Moxley and Brian Danielson. The thing with this Brian Danielson run with the championship is it feels so short. Like, you're going to do he has the title until he retires. He loses it, and then he has to retire thing, right? We're doing that storyline. Not a bad storyline in the vacuum. Perfectly reasonable. He's had the belt for 47 days. By the time you hear this, or at least by the time Wrestle Dream happens, it's going to be 48. The whole, with this storyline, you have to put Danielson in peril, and at no point have I felt like he's really been in peril of losing this title, and that includes a match against Okada, and that includes a match against Jack Perry. Jack Perry never felt like he was going to win that match at all. And Okada, I mean, it felt like he could have, I guess, because he's a big name, but it would have been weird booking. It would have been a weird way to handle that story. So this feels entirely too soon for Brian Danielson to drop this belt. On the other hand, Jon Moxley is maybe the hottest or most developed storyline you have in this company right now. You could maybe point to Will Ospreay instead. But Moxley is, so I feel like he's the most central guy in the company right now in terms of how this pay-per-view has been built. So are you going to have him come in and lose this match? I can't imagine it. It would be so weird with him as basically his first big match in this heel turn gimmick change. But I think it makes more sense for him to lose. I don't know that's what they'll do. But it just feels like something that they should have had happen in February, you know? Give it a few months of Danielson doing I'm a struggling champion, but I'm squeaking by and I'm beating people, and then have Moxley come in and, like, I just feel like it's kind of hit me over the past week that this is way too early for either of these guys to lose, which is the second time they've done that with Danielson, with the Okada match, where it felt like neither guy should really be losing, but yet here we are. So, I don't know, man. I just genuinely do not know what would be the right thing to do here. If Moxley loses, they've got to do it in a way where he retains his legitimacy, but also is still on the table as a future opponent. The whole put Danielson out of his misery thing only works if he's... I don't think it works thematically. I think Moxley's performance has been great. I like the idea that he'll be CC. I want to be clear on that stuff. I think they made Marina Shafir look like a huge badass. I'm worried that means she'll eventually wrestle. I haven't been particularly impressed with her wrestling, but maybe this will be the thing that pushes her through to good. I would like that to be the case. I don't know. It feels like this is set up to be Danielson losing, and I just don't think it's the right time to pull that trigger. But we're into the situation now of their own creation. The match should be great. I'm at a 10 on it, frankly. I mean, it's Danielson. It's Danielson in his hometown. It's a revitalized Moxley who feels like he is invested. If they have Shane McMahon come in as the secret mastermind behind BCC, I can't promise I won't throw my remote through the TV. I think that would be atrocious. I have no need for Shane McMahon in this company right now. Especially in this storyline. I don't need a vaguely heel, not quite authority figure, but, you know, important person, I guess. I don't need a McMahon. Don't need a McMahon in this company. I understand why it would be appealing to some people to bring it. Because it is noteworthy, a McMahon doing something in a wrestling company that's not WWE. I get it. I just don't need it. I just don't think that's going to do jack for me. And I don't know. I guess we'll see. And that's the show. That's the Wrestle Dream card. It looks pretty good on paper. AEW always delivers on pay-per-view. I'm a little nervous about some of the finishes, how they might turn out. We'll see. And I, you know, that's where we are. That's AEW, baby. One quick thing, FSM 50, that is coming up. I'm excited to be voting for it again. I feel like my top two are pretty nailed down. I got Ospreay and Danielson right now. I could flip that if Danielson has a big end of the year. We'll see if Danielson retires, then it's going to pretty clearly be Ospreay. I've got Shingo third, and then I've got Takeshita fourth, and then Zack Sabre Jr. at five. I feel like Shingo is a pretty safe number three, but I could see him dropping maybe one or two spots if someone like Takeshita gets hot. This is after me watching WWE's big matches. There's still some AEW matches I should watch that I'm trying to get to, but I haven't yet. New Japan, I've watched mainly all the big New Japan matches except for a couple premium events that I haven't got around to watching, and probably won't until they're free. So I've got those, and I have been getting caught up on Tokyo Joshi Pro. Oh, Dragon Gate. I've also been watching Dragon Gate. I'm like three shows behind on Dragon Gate. But Tokyo Joshi Pro, I'm up to May for their big matches that I've seen spoken of highly. And look, I gotta be honest with you. I think that's a great little promotion. I think they have a lot of talent. They've got three very good wrestlers that I would not be shocked would be in my top 50 by year's end. Miyu Watanabe, Miyu Yamashita, and Shoko Nakajima. I think they're all tremendous, and I love watching them work. Right now, and this is only with watching less than half a year of their stuff, top stuff, I got Watanabe just outside the top 30, Yamashita right outside the top 40, and Nakajima on the edge of the top 50. I think that their top workers are extremely good. There's a lot of comedy matches that tend to get voted up on Cage Match, like people slapping like eights on it. So that's, you're saying that's like a 4-star match, and like I can't, they don't work for me like that. Hyper Misao is pretty good as a comedy worker, but she's out with the ACL, I think, an ACL injury, which is a damn shame. But also a lot of her stuff is just kind of like, okay, you're being goofy, and it's not terrible. I'm not like loathing watching this, but all the same, it's not, you know, you're not knocking it out of the park for me. Let's see. The rest of my top 10 right now, and this is very much an area in flux, is I think I mentioned Zack Sabre Jr. at 5. So Yota Tsuji at 6. I think he's had a tremendous year. I think people were a little too down on his G1. I think I watched it like a month and a half after the fact, but he had some very good matches. Kyle Fletcher, I think, has quietly had a really good year. Then Swerve Strickland, Okada, again, I think that he's still had a really good year. I know it's not really like an Okada year, but when he has wrestled, he's done great stuff. And then Orange Cassidy. I would not be shocked if a couple of those guys get knocked out of the top 10 there. I don't know that it's going to be anyone from New Japan, because we are kind of in heading towards the doldrums there of the year. And Naito, I have him top 40. I have him 40th right now. And this is all, like, once we get past the top five, it's all like, you know, there's tiers, you know, and he could go up a little bit, but he could also, I could see him falling out of the top 50 as I watch more stuff. But he is, this is kind of like Jericho in, what was it, 2020, I think, where you really started to see him age. Maybe it was 2021, where he started to, like, show the signs of dropping off. Naito, this might be his last full year as a top guy. It's like someone you can really rely on at the top of the card, which is a damn shame to say, but time comes for us all. Now, Dragon Gate, I am a couple big shows behind. My top Dragon Gate this year is Shun Skywalker. I've kind of seen the light with him after being kind of on him for a couple years. Like, I thought he was good, but not, you know. I think he's had a much better year than otherwise. And I've got Yamato right behind him at 24. Let's see. Top 20 surprises. I think maybe the biggest surprise for me is that I have Game Kid at 17 right now. I think he's taken a tremendous step forward, and I really think highly of the G1 he had. I think he's shown, I think, really great ability, and it's cool to see that. Other surprises in the top 50. I am mildly surprised that I have two WWE acts in the top 40. I don't think I had a single one in my top 50 last year. Drew McIntyre, and I have the tag team of Axiom and Nathan Frazier. So just to speak on that a little bit, I am kind of shifting this into a Fred talks about his extremely nerdy hobby, but I mean, it's a wrestling podcast. You should be used to it at this point. But my problem with WWE, especially last year, the first time I was a voter for this, is that they don't really care about quality matches. That's not like a central thing to them. And it's always funny when people, you know, react to the FSM 50 and are like, well, where's the WWE guys? I'm like, Gunter hasn't been having those matches this year. And it's not his fault. He's still that wrestler, but he doesn't have a lot of them. And I think quantity has to matter some. Drew McIntyre's been having that number. And Axiom and Nathan Frazier have been a couple times a month sometimes on NXT, which is notable for, once again, a show that really shifts around who's getting the big matches, the long matches that really let you flex your ability. They've been a regular feature of it, smartly, I think, because they're very good. And I've enjoyed their stuff. Let's see. Without really diving into much Noah this year, I'd like to get to Noah, but it's October 11th. I'm running out of time. I'll probably have to have my top 50 in at probably like 3 days into January or whenever they call for him. There's not much leeway time. And with work, you know, I do the best I can, right? You know, I've rated almost 700 matches this year. I'm trying to get more in. I wanted to get a Joshi promotion in, and I always enjoy watching Tokyo Joshi Pro, so I got that one in. Dragon Gate, Ben K is another guy that I could see going up some. I have him 36 right now. Kind of surprising, my 50 and 51 spots are Ilya Dragunov and Bron Breakker. I did not expect to like the year Bron Breakker had as much as I did, and yet I think he's had a very good year. Borderline top 50 guy right now. As I brought in my spectrum, sure, that'll knock him down a few more spots, and we'll see if he keeps getting pushed to have good matches. But I think he's, I don't know that he's got like top of the card charisma, but he's definitely evolved to the point where I think he's a good big guy heel. And I think he's very good at the do big spots and look awesome thing. I think he might be, if not now, soon, a better version of Brian Cage, which may sound like damning with faint praise, but I like Brian Cage, so, you know. Trying to think of anything else that would be interesting off of this. And if this does interest you at all, I'm happy to talk about it a little more. I answered some questions about it. You can email us at thehungiecast, HungieCast at gmail.com. Again, that's hungiecast at gmail.com. There isn't a the before it. I realize I just may have made it sound like that. Let's see, other notes. Anything else, little tidbits I think would be interesting off this. I go down to 100. I got Cody Rhodes 62 because so many of his big matches have just been like slogs. I have Gunter even lower. I have Gunter 88th right now, which I can't believe I'm saying because I love Gunter, but I think if you go off output and not reputation, this has been kind of a bleh year for him. I just think he hasn't been I know they've got him with a fake world championship, but I think he's just I think the example is the Randy Orton match that he just had on the German pay-per-view, I think it was, where they did not work a Gunter match. They worked a Randy Orton match because Randy Orton wasn't having a lot of that chopping nonsense. And I think it's important for the guy to have good matches to make this list. And will he be given the opportunity to work a lot of matches down the stretch? I'd love to see it. I love watching him work. I just don't think this isn't 2023 where he was having a lot of good matches like that. And I do also think they kind of put an artificial limit on how good their matches are sometimes because of their style. And I think that's another factor for me. But I know if you're a WWE partisan, you know, you will disagree. And that's fair. You're totally entitled to your opinion, which is what this is entirely based off of. It's just my opinion. Feel free to sit down and make your own list. You know, you can email that to me if you want. Sure. One other thing that I think is interesting. I have Baron Corbin 78, and I really liked the first few months of the year when Baron Corbin and Bron Breakker were a tag team in NXT. And yeah, they were working with Axiom and Nathan Frazier, who are better workers, but they worked very well together. And Corbin was in those matches and he was working hard, and I don't think he sucks. I don't think that we're really in danger of seeing like Corbin move up this list, you know, putting on more matches as we complete the year, just because of his spot and everything. And he's not really a singles guy. I would not be opposed to him being like a perpetual tag guy that is with someone a little better than him, but he can still go and put it out in the ring. So that's my silly opinion. And that's about it, I guess. That's without me watching any All Japan, much Noah, CMLL. I haven't watched anything, and I have a long list of matches I'd like to watch for that. That's no Stardom, Marigold. I'm trying to watch Seri. Everyone's talking about how good of a year she's having. I just watched her January match with Chihiro Hashimoto, and that was awesome. I like that a lot, but yeah, that's it. I don't think I can talk about this anymore without like dying a cringe. But yeah, that's the show this week. If you want to reach out to us, you can email us hungiepod@gmail.com. One more time, hungiepod@gmail.com. If you want to send us money, why don't you send it to Hurricane Relief instead? I just think that'd be better. Just find a good organization and try to help people out. That's it. Y'all have a good week. Next week, hopefully I'll have Tyler with me to talk about the show. Hopefully my cat won't try to eat my headphone cord. And then hopefully you'll tolerate this show again. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a great week. Take care.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.